Welcome to episode 294 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on space and space travel. If you'd like to catch the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
And the choir kicks in.
And the choir? Actually, what's happening is that the music trails out. That's what happens.
That's right. That's me the last time I listened. Oh, I'm terrible. All right.
Animals. In space. It happened earlier than I thought, although it kind of makes sense. The first animals in space were Drosophila.
Oh.
Fruit flies.
We do everything to them.
A captured V-2 rocket was used to launch them into space, not into orbit, right? You know, outside the atmosphere.
And this was on purpose, right? They didn't just...
They were just a lot of flies there that day. And so we smeared the inside of the nose cone with some peanut butter.
Let's see if this works.
In 1957, the Soviet Union launched Laika.
Oh, okay.
A doggy. Who was lived for several hours.
I've heard this one, right?
Yeah, they didn't really even try to recover her. It's very sad. Also, a bunch of V2 tests killed monkeys.
As a side note, while you're sad about the dog,
also be sad about these monkeys.
Oh,
we were doing this actually with captured V2s. We did launch one monkey into space who made it back down safely.
Okay.
But then there were a bunch of failures in a row and a bunch of dead monkeys.
Very sad. It wasn't the plan, though.
No.
They just sent that dog up there. They don't care.
The Soviets were the first to get animals back alive.
Oh.
From orbit.
Well, good for them.
It was like two dogs and a rabbit.
What were they hoping for up there?
So USA was behind in the whole space race. And mind you, we'd been working on it. We actually announced in 1955 that we were going to put something into orbit.
Yay for us.
And then they beat us to it with the Sputnik.
Yeah. They kept beating us, right? I mean, I don't know. That's how it went.
So we decided we were going to use the Atlas rocket, originally developed as the United States' first intercontinental ballistic missile, liquid-fueled.
Oh, okay.
Its operational life as a missile was between 1959 and 1963, not very long, because it took an entire day to prep a missile for launch.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a problem. But it did end up being a workhorse for the space program.
I'm surprised, because liquid fuel, I thought, I don't know. I'm just used to the boosters on the space shuttle.
Those are solid.
Yeah.
And they take very little preparation, which is why the Titan and Titan II and most of our intercontinental ballistic missiles, and even our mid-range and short-range missiles, they went with solid fuel eventually.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much easier to deal with.
But we got a lot of work out of this liquid-fueled rocket.
But it cost $2.5 million a launch.
Oh. Well, I don't know. Government spending. Yeah, what is that?
Even the Redstone, which was a cheaper rocket, but not by much, $1 million or so per launch.
Oof.
So they decided to come up with something they called Little Joe.
Okay.
They took missiles.
Yeah.
The Sargent missile.
Okay.
Which followed the Corbeil missile. I'm not kidding.
All right.
Mid-range, 20 to 80 mile range, right? Oof,
yeah.
Surface to surface.
Mm-hmm.
The Corbeil was a liquid fuel thing again. Again, a day to set up for launch.
Wow.
The Sargent comes along and it was solid fuel, but it still took like three support vehicles. But nevertheless, it could be ready within minutes and fired. Somebody thought, hey, what if we bundle a bunch of those together and stick them inside an airframe?
I know this trick from 4th of July. What have you? We'll duct tape it together.
Yeah, they put it inside this frame. It had four big stabilizing fins that could move to provide some, you know, steering.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you could see the rockets inside it or not, but every article I read about it mentioned that it looked ugly.
It's like some kid.
Oh, man. In 1959 and 1960, we launched a couple of Rhesus monkeys with this thing. We're actually testing the escape mechanism for the Mercury program.
Ah, okay.
We sent up a lot of, like, stripped down mercury capsules and tested the ejection systems and how they behaved at various speeds and various bits of the atmosphere and heat shielding and so forth.
Testing is good.
Yes, especially since the rocket was sitting there one day, ready to test the escape rocket system, when the escape rocket system went off for no particular reason.
Look, it works.
Fortunately, no one was hurt, and yeah, it did work. They recovered it and used it again.
Somebody hit a button. And they, just, they never admitted it. It was like the janitor leaned against the wrong panel. I need to get out of here.
But 1959, Sam, who was named after the School of Aviation Medicine, she did. He did his first flight.
Okay.
They were aiming for 4 or 5 minutes of zero G, but the flight fell a little short.
Oh.
And he only got 3 minutes of zero G. But I recovered him. He was fine.
Hey, Sam.
In 1960, we send up Miss Sam.
Miss Sam.
The girl Sam.
Okay.
this isn't confusing.
No.
She got the full 5 minutes of zero G.
Oh, she went.
She had been trained to pull a lever when she saw a light come on.
Oh, okay.
For the first 30 seconds after the launch, she did not respond to stimuli.
That tells you something right there.
And, you know, the medical recording showed she was still awake, but she was a little shooken up by the whole thing.
What just happened? Are you kidding me? I pulled the lever before.
Maybe they'll get me out of here. Those were both suborbital flights. You still get zero G in any flight where you turn the engine off and are out of the atmosphere. You go ballistic, you get zero G for a while. But you don't get a loop around the world in a suborbital.
Have you heard of the Vomit Comet, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
we only got so much time here.
Oh, okay, okay.
In 1959, just to rub it in, the Soviet Union hit the moon with a probe.
First one on the moon. Oh, those guys. I love them. I don't know.
Yeah. 1961. The Soviets went ahead and put a human in space, Yuri Gagarin.
Ooh. Hell of a name.
And now the United States is very behind.
Isn't that the first human? Like, yeah. See? Wow.
In 1961, the Americans put a chimpanzee in a suborbital flight.
We got to do this in stages.
Another one, Enos, I think, is how you say E-N-O-S.
Okay, sounds right.
Did a full orbital flight and came back. Same year.
Oh, good for Enos.
May 5th, 1961, Alan Shepard did a suborbital flight. Cool. The first American in space, but not in orbit. And actually, the Russians managed to squeeze in another manned flight before. February 20, 1962, John Glenn finally gets into orbit.
Man, I want to see, like, all the news from the 1960s, you know? Man.
You know what's funny? I forgot to segue in and out of Monday. Have you ever been to the Smithsonian?
I got kicked
out.
Air
and Space Museum?
Yes.
You're just like the bad boy.
I was a child. I was,
Never mind that story. I remember walking around there with this, like, this forest of rockets. And tucked away in one corner was a green one.
Okay.
Because it had been made here.
That means it's green.
Yeah, the placard said that the green coating was an antifungal coating.
Oh, okay.
Is that just what we told them after it ended up covered in streaks of mold? You know, if we paint it green, they won't notice. We'll call it an antifungal coating.
It was an accident, but yeah.
All those different kinds of rockets. And we talked about all those rocket engines last Monday. That wasn't the only idea that was kicking around.
I thought we were going to Monday for a second.
No, this is Monday. You've been having difficulties with that.
Hey, square footage for rockets? Yeah, you can store a whole bunch of them into one building.
Yes.
They just smash right
Where they will be covered with mold. And subsequently painted green. So as long as we were building all these rockets to launch nuclear bombs at each other,
yeah,
that somebody thought, well, let's use the nuclear bombs to launch things.
Instead of delivering it, well, let's just set it off and see how high we can get.
Yeah, it's well, there had been some tests where they were hanging graphite balls about 30 feet over the epicenter of the explosion, and they kept finding them intact downrange a mile or two. And the worst that was happening is a bit of the graphite was ablated or, you know, burned away.
Okay.
So it occurred to Euler, who's a name, in 1957 that you could actually drive a spacecraft with repeated nuclear explosions.
Why not?
I mean, the idea sounds absolutely insane, and really it is.
I don't know. When we got nuclear power, we tried everything.
Yeah, they've actually done some studies on using nuclear, like a reactor, and then pumping water through it to cool it and make thrust.
Yeah.
Oh. Boils into steam. And the best you can get from chemical rockets, theoretically, without a in a vacuum, is like 450 seconds.
Well, that's not very long.
No, and it's not. And then they did these studies, and they were only getting up to 600-700 seconds. So not much of an improvement for having to carry a nuclear reactor on.
I know, super heavy.
It occurred to some people, what if we don't confine the explosions and just have a massive pusher plate?
Pusher plate. Okay.
Now, okay. What I'm reading is that the theoretical specific impulse is on the low end about 10,000 seconds.
Ooh.
The theoretical upper end is about 1 million seconds.
Well, we're going to Saturn.
That was actually one of the missions they planned.
Oh, hey.
All right. And once you've got that much specific impulse and are able to make a lot of thrust, you can change your entire equation. They weren't planning to build some careful weight-saving device. They were planning to bolt it together like a battleship.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for comparison, the Saturn V, the one that took us to the moon, was 363 feet tall and about 6 million pounds. What would that be? 3,000 tons.
Oh, okay.
Right. The one they were looking at was about 16 stories tall. I'm sorry. I don't know what that means in feet. That is what they said.
Okay.
It had a diameter of 130 feet.
Oh.
It weighed about 4,000 tons, so, you know, about 8 million pounds, in the same neighborhood, weight-wise. The Saturn V could get about 310,000 pounds to the moon.
Okay.
Oh, actually, that's low Earth orbit. The smallest one they looked at several different sizes, with the bang-bang, would deliver about 100 tons.
Okay.
200,000 pounds.
Okay.
To Mars. That's a different story, isn't it?
Yeah. I got a question about thrust. I mean, this constant nuclear explosion or series of...
They were planning to set one off with about a 0.16 kiloton yield, about 200 feet back from the ship, once every second.
Okay. So... Can a human...
This is not a smooth ride.
Okay. Can a human survive? So no.
Yes, they can, although it will take a serious shock absorber system.
Oh, okay.
Now, one of the links I have, labwithbrad.com, on this show page, is hopefully a picture of one of the test models they used.
Okay.
It was they were dropping conventional explosives behind the thing to see about designing things like a pusher plate and a shock absorber. I guess one of them is sitting in the Air and Space Museum. I mean, it wasn't there when I was there. Some of the stuff didn't get declassified till like the 1990s?
Yeah.
You don't know. I don't know. I didn't check. All right, let's get out of here.
All righty.
Oh, that project blows my mind. Project Orion. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
One of the craft they were looking at, Freeman Dyson,
okay,
physicist guy who took a year off from the Institute of Advanced Studies
Okay.
to work on this project, he pictured an 8 million ton vehicle.
Wow.
That's a small town.
Yeah, right?
In space.
Big dreams of the ISS before we ever got around to it.
And you saw the video, right? I have confirmed it is footage of the little test vehicles that use conventional explosive.
Mm-hmm.
The putt-putt around. That was actually one of their nicknames, the putt-putt.
I remember, it looks like the nose cone of a missile. And they just keep exploding stuff underneath it.
Oh, well, anyway, the whole thing about putting animals in space never really stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you an example, the French in 1963 were the first to put a cat in space.
The French. Of course they put a cat in space.
You know, they recovered the animal. It was alive. Presumably it landed on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know how long I've been waiting to say that.
Right, so, on his feet and smoked a cigarette.
I think you and French. I can admit that the United States lost the space race.
Yeah, yeah.
At least up to this point. But then we moved the finish line.
Yeah.
We said, the moon. We're going for the moon.
We've been there, said the Russians, but no.
And President Kennedy said his famous speech.
We're going to do the thing.
It's pretty close to how he said it.
I know.
We determined to put a man on the moon within this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Man, in a way with words.
Yeah. Sorry. Decade.
Decade.
Oh, it gives me hope. Even the best speech is in history occasionally have muffed words. What are you going to do? Anyway, we're going to talk about all that.
Whoa.
Next time. See you then.
Bye.